Thanks very much, Sue, and the church for providing an opportunity for me to speak, and next week as well, providing today goes well. And Corey, if you don't mind putting the Bible reading up on the display, that would be really good. Just one thing about jars of clay that came to mind. And some of you might know what this is called, but I don't. But there's a Japanese art form. It's got a particular name. And what they do is they have things that are made out of clay or china or porcelain, and they break them. And then the art form is to put them back together again and actually do it with a special glue. And it's very, very fiddly and lots of fine motor skills. And I know a lot of Westerners have taken it up because it's very good.
Mosaic.
Say it again.
Is it mosaic? Is that what you
mean? It has got a Japanese name, you know, a bit like origami paper folding.
Kintsugi?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. But anyway, it just made me think of that. Because I was reading the other day of a famous Australian who I cannot remember the name of, who, as his way of coping with stress and so forth, he's taken up this art form where you have a shattered pot or some sort of vessel, and the idea is to put it back together again so it looks like the original, but of course it's not going to be completely the same. And it just made me think of jars of clay today, because that's what we are. No matter how healthy or fit we are, at the end of the day, all of us are just jars of clay that will and are falling apart. That's just life. But there's that restoration like the Japanese art form. It's really interesting to hear people's views on historical figures and what they think of them. And one person I can think of is Winston Churchill. I've actually read quite a bit about him, so I know quite a bit about Churchill. But it's really interesting to read and hear people's views on this man. Because some people say, yes, he was a hero. Some people say, he was a great Prime Minister. Some people say, he was a flawed genius. And I've heard other people say, he was a war criminal. And then I've heard other people say he was a racist. And then I hear other people say that he was the saviour of Britain and Europe in World War II. All these different views on one person who is probably one of the most famous people of history, who was alive just last century. So what about the view of the Christ child? So I just want to read from Matthew chapter 2, and it's from the NIV. And Corey, if you just keep it moving as I read, if you don't mind. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, They return to their country by another route. Just a couple of things about the wise men. Nowhere in the Bible does it say there were three. That's probably just tradition because of the three gifts. There could well have been more. Might have only been two. But it definitely does not say there were three. And they probably came from the lands of Persia, which is modern-day Iran, or Armenia, which is near Iran. That's where they probably came from. And it's most likely they were representatives of their government. They were literate, because remember, not many people were literate back in those times, government officials. And it's interesting, it's most likely that they were sent as emissaries or ambassadors or representatives of their government to acknowledge the birth of a new king. My understanding is, and I'm more than happy to be contradicted on this for those who have a deeper theological knowledge than I do, is that when it says that they worshipped him, they didn't worship him knowing that he was God. They worshipped him because they believed him to be a new king. So it was a political worshipping. However, in saying that, I just wonder what happened on that night and if what they saw took them to a new level. But I don't know that. I don't know. So like the wise men, at the time of the birth of Jesus, who did people think he was? So I'm going to ask four questions through this sermon. The first one is, who did people think he was at the time of birth? Secondly, who did people think he was during his ministry? Thirdly, who do people think he is today? And fourthly, who do you think he is? They're my four questions. So the first one is, at the time of the birth of Jesus, who did people think he was? Well, we know there was King Herod. King Herod was the Romans' representative, and he was the king over Israel. And he obviously looked at the Christ child as being a threat to his throne. Just like Game of Thrones all over again, really. So he looked at him as being a political threat to his throne. He believed he could be the one that would unite the Jews and overthrow Roman rule. Which, of course, like many leaders today, are very fearful of, because they will lose all of the things that they cherish, such as luxury and so forth. What about Mary? What did she think? Well, my understanding is Mary was well aware that she was that she had conceived Jesus miraculously. She was well aware that the baby to be born was to be the saviour of the world. But that's easy for us to say in retrospect, 2,000 years later. If you were the woman carrying the child and you've been told by a supernatural being that your child is going to be the saviour of the world, that's pretty big stuff to take in. That would be pretty overwhelming. But I think Mary was well and truly aware that something special was going on. What about the owner of the inn? My understanding would be that he was probably so busy dealing with all those people coming to Bethlehem to deal with the census that he mainly just looked at these two and thought, you poor things, but I've got room for you in the stable. There's some hay and some straw. See you later. It's probably the last he thought of them. Just busy. What about the shepherds? I always find the shepherds really interesting. They sort of remind me of being the real salt of the earth, sort of working class people of the time. Now, they actually witnessed supernatural events. They actually witnessed angels singing, which would be just mind-blowing. So they knew something very special was happening, that this was supernatural. It wasn't just political. And as for the animals, who knows what they were thinking, but there were definitely animals in the stable. So there's all these people already right at the birth who have these different views of who Jesus was. So what about during Jesus' 3 years of ministry? And if you read the Gospels carefully, the views of some people on who Jesus was are just incredible. There were those who thought he was a great prophet. That was a pretty popular view. Oh, he was the next prophet in line. We've had all these prophets in the Old Testament. Here's the next one. There were those who thought he was a great teacher. He was often called rabbi, Jewish for teacher. So many people looked at him as being an amazing teacher. And even when he was a child, I think it was when he was about 10, he went to the temple and taught. And the rabbis and the priests in the temple were amazed at his knowledge. There were Jews who believed he was demon-possessed. Clearly says that. Says that by the power of Beelzebub, he is doing these miracles. So there were Jews, the religious people of the day, who believed that this man Jesus was of the devil. Others said he was a good man. That was a common response. And you know, one of the people in the Gospels who approached Jesus and said, "Oh, good teacher." And Jesus said, "Only one person's good, and that is God." And I'll explain that in a minute because it seems contradictory. There were many who claimed he was the Son of God. There were those who expected him to be the political and military leader who would free the Jews from the bondage of Roman rule. That was a really popular view. And that was, the Messiah means the person who will actually free us from the yoke of Roman rule, of persecution. He's the one who will deliver us. He'll lead the armies and he will deliver us. Which is why for so many Jews, Jesus was a disappointment. Because they expected to be freed from the Romans because of him. There were people who said, "Was he Elijah? Was he Moses?" Yeah. Now, he was only in ministry for 3 years. So from when he was 30 to when he was 33, he was in ministry. It's not really a long time. You think, Mrs. McCredden, how long did you talk for? Decades?
79, I graduated.
Okay, so decades. I'm up to almost 3 decades. He only ministered for 3 years. Within those 3 years, you've got people ranging in their views from prophet, teacher, good man, demon-possessed, political figure, Messiah, Son of God. And that's why he's here on earth, doing his thing. So, what about today? Who do people say the Christ child truly is? Now, I read Time magazine quite a lot, and another magazine I love to read is called The Weekend Australian magazine. I don't know if anyone else reads it, but The Weekend Australian has a colour magazine that has really good articles. In both of those magazines, they regularly, every week, have a page where they interview someone who's well known. And in the Time magazine, I think they call it 10 questions to, and it's got dot, 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 and then whoever the person is. And in The Weekend Australian, it's just a page with questions that they ask this person. And it's really interesting that the question, when it's asked of who would you most like to have at your dinner party, who would you most like to interview, or who would you most like to have a conversation with, by far, the most common answer is Jesus of Nazareth. And that is coming from a whole range of people. That is coming from people who, from what I understand, are ranging from atheists right through to whatever you want to pick, anyone. The number one, without a doubt. And it's interesting that if you read books or watch documentaries about the most influential people of history, well, I can't think of an example where I haven't seen it. Jesus is number one. Full stop. Every single one has Jesus at number one. John Lennon, when the Beatles were at their highest, Who did he compare themselves to? Jesus. He said, we're bigger than Jesus. When Tiger Woods was at the height of his power, who did his father compare him to? Jesus. He's having more influence in this world than Jesus does. And I remember when Fred Hollows was alive, so Fred Hollows, the man who worked with the blind, did amazing stuff, and he was in Eritrea, which is a country near Ethiopia, and Eritrea was a basket case, and he said, it is so bad here, even Jesus couldn't fix it. So they're the sort of references we get. It's always back to this person, Jesus. Even if the person doesn't believe that Jesus is, as many of us do, or hopefully all of us do, the Son of God. Now, a very common view is Jesus was a very good man, a great man. That is probably the most popular view in Australia, besides the Christian view. You'll ask people and you'll say, what do you think of Jesus? And they will straight away say, he was a good bloke. That's often the Australian answer. He is a good bloke. He was a really good man. And yes, he was. But there's a really big flaw in this view, which I want to show you. You'll hear people say, he was a decent man. He was a good teacher. He was a great moral leader. And on the face of it, this sounds really positive. But it has a major flaw. Tell me, if someone claimed to be a great moral leader, to be a good, trustworthy person, would you expect them to tell the truth? Would you expect them to be a truth teller? Yes? Okay, this is where the argument falls down about Jesus being just a good man. Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. Now, for those who don't understand that phrase, Jesus is actually saying, I'm divine. I'm actually deity. I'm actually not of this planet. I'm from somewhere else. And I've been around for a long, long time and will continue to be around for a long, long time. Jesus said words such as, no one comes to God except through me. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was listening to a great moral teacher and that person said that, I'm only really left with two options. Well, actually, three options. One, they're crazy. Two, they're lying. Or three, they are what they are. There's really no other option. If you had a person right here now saying, hey guys, guess what? I'm the way to heaven. There's only three options. Okay, they're off their tree, or they're telling the truth, or they're lying. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And when one of the disciples said to him, well, you are the Son of the living God. I think it was Peter who said it. Peter said, you are the Son of the living God. Jesus did not deny it. In fact, he said, yes, and it's been revealed to you by God. So if he is not God's son, he was lying. And if he was lying, I struggle to find how he could be a great moral teacher. So please don't be deluded by this argument or by this view that you hear, particularly in Australia, of he was a good bloke. Yes, he was a good bloke, but he wasn't just a good bloke. Because the claims he made can only be explained those three ways. Then there are those who say he was a crazy man. He was deluded. And I remember a few years ago reading a letter to the editor, to the Australian, where a person tried to explain that Jesus was a paranoid schizophrenic. That explained his behaviour. Now there are many people who believe that. So he was a madman, a lunatic. They're the different views that we're going to get today. And of course, it's going to be the typical Australian view, and that is, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter. I just let me get on with my life. So, who do you say, who do I say Jesus is? At this time leading up to Christmas, we actually have time to reflect on the greatest question. Now, I'm going to phrase the question two different ways, all right? The absolute number one question every human being of history has had to face is, are we alone? Is there a God? But at the end of the day, there is no greater question. If you can think of a more important question than that, please tell me. Okay, but billions of people through history, that has been the biggest question they faced. So I'm going to rephrase the question. The question is, who was Jesus? That, in effect, is the number one question that every human being has to answer. At this time of Christmas, and it seems to be diminishing, but we're still seeing lots of images of the Nativity, thank goodness. Seeing it in cards, seeing it on posters, television shows, all sorts of places. So if there's ever going to be a time when people will go, what's this baby thing all about? It's now. Hopefully, particularly in our country, lots of Australians are going, I wonder what this is really all about. You know, it can be tempting to look at those images of the Nativity and think of very sort of homey thoughts, by the fire, family time, gentle Jesus, meet Jesus, baby in a manger, memories of home, memories of past Christmases. They're all good. But if that's all it is, then I'm sorry, Christmas is going to be pretty empty. It's not going to be fulfilling. There's not enough just in that. Now, some of you might still be at a point where you are still working out who Jesus is. Was he a good bloke? Was he a great moral teacher? Was he a revolutionary? Was he a crazy man? Was he a religious figure? And most of you, I assume, believe that Jesus is the Son of God. That would be my clear assumption. But what does that mean for us through the coming week? Because I've always been taught, when you give a sermon, if people can't leave with at least one thought of, well, what does that actually mean for me for the next 7 days and beyond, then why give it? This is what I think it means. If we truly want to be modern wise men and wise women, and I've got that in capital letters, as in the wise men, then recognising the Christ child as divine means our lives should reflect this. To me, that is the take-home message of Christmas. Does our recognition of who he is translate into who we are? That would probably be the one thing I would say to take away from this. Does your recognition of who he is reflect on who you are? Because it is really easy to theoretically believe that Jesus is the Son of God. It's pretty hard, actually, to argue against it when you think that he walked on water during a storm and he rose from the dead and he turned 5 loaves and 2 fishes into enough food to feed 4,000. Hard to argue against it. But the question is that translating into your life and my life? In the manner in which we live, our behaviour and our attitude and the hope that we have, has it translated into every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, morning, afternoon, evening, has it translated into, not only do I believe he's the Son of God, not only do I believe that little baby, this is hard to get your head around, do I believe that tiny little infant in that manger actually created the universe? That's pretty hard to understand. But because of that, it's now going to make a difference in how I live. That's the take-home message of Christmas. I'm just going to close with prayer. Living God, thank you for your grace. We certainly don't understand in our current jars of clay everything about our faith, but help us to understand what we can and to translate it to everyday living, the way that we treat our spouse, our children, that we work, our giving, our thoughts. And we do thank you for Christmas. And we thank you for the chance tonight to share a deeper meaning of Christmas with the community.